Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch, and one woman called her the over 40 guru to watch in 2017. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Hi, and welcome back to Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host, Amanda Thebe. I'm super excited today to have my good friend, Alison Schaefer, on the show. So welcome to the show, Alison.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I'm so excited that you're doing this and covering this topic.
I am too. The dialogue needs to be happening, and so I'm glad we're the ones at the forefront of this.
Yeah.
So I'd like to just introduce Alison from a personal side, how I know Alison, before I hand the baton over to her. So I met Alison, I think it's now 10 years ago, surprisingly enough, when I was a graphic designer on her promotional DVD. Do you remember that time, Alison?
Oh, that was 10 years ago. And oh my gosh, yep.
Yeah. And so I know Alison from as a personal friend now, because we've been out and had a few dinners, etc. But I've also reached out to Alison on a very personal matter for me. So I reached out to Alison in her professional sense when my oldest son, who I've since found out Alison has autism, he has a high functioning Asperger's, which makes sense, but he was having some complications, and I was in a situation where my whole life felt overwhelming because my son was not coping just with everyday existence. And so I desperately reached out to Alison. And one of the things that I loved about our conversation and how you deal with everything you do in life, Alison, is that you take what seem like overwhelming, complicated scenarios in people's lives that feel like there's absolutely no resolution, and you give them complete clarity. And then you do that by giving people solutions to help them through the process. And so I feel like you're a lifesaver personally, and everybody should have you in their life.
You didn't say you're going to have me on the show to make me cry. That was beautiful. And thank you. And that kind of feedback gives me tremendous, you know, encouragement to continue doing all the community service and work that I do.
Yeah.
And that's my goal. My goal is that clarity piece, is to take something that is commonplace, everyday stuff, but which we don't have an understanding around, because not everybody goes and gets a psychology degree to raise a kid. It's not, you know, and yet with a little information and a little reframing, somehow things can be somehow simple when explained in a different way. You know, the narrative can be different. And then I just, of course, love solutions, because there's, you know, we still have to be pragmatic and go home and face our kids, right?
Exactly. And so the reason I had you on this show is you're known as a family counselor, as a parent and expert, but you're also, like you said, you're a psychologist. Do you do the Adlerian methodology or protocol? Am I correct in my pronunciation?
Yes, well done. Yes, named after Alfred Adler, who was a colleague of Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung's. And everybody knows those names, and very few people know Adler's name, because so much of what he contributed to modern psychology pretty much got adopted and accepted and shows up in a million different places. So it's very mainstream, to tell you the truth, but it's a super robust, positivistic, holistic kind of psychology. It's fabulous. Although my first degree is in kinesiology, Bachelor of Science, I didn't really know I was going to go into all of this until I had kids. But I've now spent a lifetime learning from the masters and trying to take complex ideas and ideas from other journals and whatnot, and really make it into something that's super accessible for living healthily. And whether that's us in our menopausal years, or whether that's with kids going through the teen angst, or whether that's a toddler who needs to potty train, there is science and yet also philosophies for what we need to be doing in life. And I'm a lifelong learner. I just really love converting it into something that busy modern families can ingest.
Yeah, I had quite a few comments this week, and one of the main themes that kept running is that I love her. She's so smart and so quick to give great advice, a great communicator, but it's just so practical. And that's what I think people resonate.
Yeah. And I'm trying to pop it out through every channel so that other people can share it as well, which is why, like, what a great time for social media to be here. Because Now we've got, like you said, we've got these podcasts and I've got a blog and I've got a website and I have a YouTube channel and I've got books if people prefer to the old classic style of books, like iBooks. Any channel that I can fill with this information so that people can get the benefit and pass it on, that's just so much easier in this day and age than it would have been, you know, turn of the century when you would have had to go out to lecture in another town in your horse and buggy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Your books were on my shelf the whole way through parenting. They're just super simple advice and approaches for a democratic approach to parenting, and I love it. So now let's get on to the topic of the show. So what I wanted to speak to you about was an area that seems to be of great confusion to a lot of women going through menopause, and I actually experienced this myself, so I can completely relate to this. And menopause, as we know, happens to a woman, and we expect all of the hot flashes and other things and our periods to start changing, but there's a whole host of weird symptoms we just don't expect to happen. And one of those is a sense of feeling lost and vulnerable. And personally, from my own experiences, I started having real issues with understanding how my role in life was going to be because I felt lost and alone and fairly invisible in my own little world of pain and symptoms that I was experiencing. And so one of the things I really want to talk about in the show today is, well, one, did you experience this? But for women who are experiencing this sense of loneliness, feeling like they're the only ones going through this in the world, how they can move forward. Is this something that you recognize? Have you seen
it? Oh, my goodness. Oh, yes. Oh, you know, and again, this is why the conversation is so important, to normalize this experience for women, because it's incredibly common. And in fact, just thanks to my training, when we look at developmental psychology, you know, we focus on kids when they're little and we'll say, oh, you know, by this age, they should be rolling over. By this age, they should be able to say so many words. By this age, they should have this much impulse control. You know, we follow this developmental thing, and then somehow we think it ends magically with the pediatrician. But the truth is, all of life is a developmental task. And, you know, we maybe heard a little bit more about that when we started hearing about being the squeeze generation, where we have both little kids to raise and aging parents to look after. And we might get a bit of a hint of that. But the truth is, the entire, every decade, every few years, there are different developmental challenges. And certainly for women, and unique perhaps to our culture and the time that we're living in, we recognize something called the Fertile Valley is one of the ways I've heard it described. I don't know if that was from Dr. Christine Northrup. There's many women who write about this time of life. Yeah. But, you know, I would say, a woman's issue, that we can often put a lot of our identity into what we do in a caretaker role for our kids, for our husbands, ways that we pleased our parents. And because of that combination of both being a caretaker pleaser, which is very common for good little girls, you know, don't rock the boat, be a good little girl, get your sense of approval from others. That's how we've socialized girls traditionally. And now we've run to the part of our life where our kids don't need us anymore. And we're starting to have this wisdom arise in us. And there can be this darkness that says, you know, where am I? What was this all about? There's this sort of like time for reorganizing and reflecting. But like anything else, there's sort of like this darkness before the light, that we go through this desert of despair. It's a very important opportunity, and that we shouldn't be frightened of it, because there is, in a sense, a rebirth. Women have this rebirth and men don't. Men just sort of lie down and say, I'm done working. I've done all my growth. Stop bugging me. And often we see this really hurts our marriages, because women are ready to take off with their new life after they figure it all out. And men are like, don't drag me there. I've spent my whole life climbing the corporate ladder. I want to stop it being ambitious. So it's interesting. I like the women's version much better.
Yeah, exactly. I resonate with that as well, because I went when I was doing my research, I was looking at different cultures and how they approach menopause. And the Chinese call it their second spring. Mm-hmm. And it's a rebirth. And when I first started experiencing perimenopause, I was like, how dare they? This is so awful. I hate the way I feel right now. But I think that as you start to take a step back and just look at how everything is happening in your life, I think I can definitely see that there are opportunities. One of the things that I really think is important to talk about is that this is normal, and women do not believe that it's normal. And so they often feel that they want to be heard, but they don't know who to talk to. And as women, we tend not to complain. I think that's a generalization, but I think we're tough and we soldier on. You know, there's a war to be won. We don't want to complain. Yeah, I obsessively talk about this menopause now all the time. Yeah, it can still be a fairly taboo subject, right? And it's even talking to my husband about this, sometimes I feel like I'm having to repeat myself 1,000 times because he doesn't get it. People don't truly understand what's happening. And I think that that's part of the problem. Do you?
Well, yes. And I think men also go through a type of menopause. You know, he may be in a different cycle of his development than you, but they're different than female menopause. But unless you're there yourself, other people might not understand what that experience is about. And I think that in this day and age with, you know, Brené Brown's, you know, gabillion viewed TED talk, you know, we're more open to being vulnerable. We're more open to talking about the things that were taboo before. And as we start to get into these conversations or find the right group of people that are willing to talk about it, it's very enlightening to see that we're not alone. And to put it again in that, I love that you're looking at different cultures, because we have to appreciate, you know, we live in a culture unlike the Chinese where youth is everything. I mean, not only are children exalted, but, you know, nubile breasts and skin that has no wrinkles. Like, we admire and sexualize youth. And, you know, young, the millennials are taking over the companies and the startups. And now the old people, my God, you're so old. You're, you know, we don't, unlike Asian cultures who say with age comes wisdom, we don't revere that as much in our culture. We are very youth-loving culture. So I think it's particularly more difficult from a cultural perspective here than it is in some other places of the world.
I believe the media doesn't help with all of that as well. We're so underserved, as I continually wax lyrical about, but talking about like this enlightenment and about becoming, it's the rebirth. I do truly believe that it's a process we have to go through. Like you say, we have to feel a little bit lost. We have to acknowledge that we're maybe not the people we were before, but we can become the person we want to be. It's just that there's so much change with, like you said, that to do with work, like employment, children leaving home, maybe your body doesn't look the way it used to be. You know, there's so many things that externally that can impact us at this time of life, yet probably inside we still feel as young as we used to. It's a little bit of an oxymoron in our body.
Yes, because there's the conflict. I look in the mirror and I still see my 25-year-old self, because that's where my self-concept is. And, you know, I used to be able to do all these things in a day and take on these commitments, and suddenly I'm tired. Like, why is my body fighting me? Like, I want to do all the things I used to be able to do, but suddenly I have to go to bed at 9 o'clock, or I'm up at 4:30. I'm always texting with my menopausal friends that are getting these 4:30 wake up.
The sleep thing is hilarious, because one of the forums I host, sleep is a big topic.
Yeah.
Waking up in insomnia. I've gone the other way. I've turned into a complete grandma. I go to bed at 9 o'clock and would naturally wake up at 10 the next morning. I sleep way too much now. But that's menopause too. So Alison, can you relate any of these to your personal life? Have you had to sort of look at your life and make some changes or reframe situations to help you move forward through this phase?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I had symptoms, still have some symptoms. I had to, you know, laugh through the hot flashes while I'm standing on stage in front of a crowd speaking, you know, mopping myself publicly as the sweat's dripping down my face. You know, I joke with my friends that, you know, the only people that I can text at 4:30 in the morning are my other menopausal friends, because they're all up with their sleep disruptions too. Looking in the mirror and saying, I envision myself still as a 27-year-old or a 32-year-old. and what I see back is something different and having to reconcile that. But through it all, and what I would say has been helpful for me is to not feel like it's betrayal or that I'm at war with myself, but to, you know, take a more mindfulness approach to not be at battle with it and sort of say, well, this is what it is. This is the next thing. And I just somehow been able to be curious enough about it to not feel it as something that's letting me down, that I'm being attacked or something that I have to fix. I'm more curious about it. I'm like, huh, what's up with that? And don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean I'm still not trying to figure out, you know, how to stop a sag or whatever, but I found little things like, oh, isn't that interesting that I'm feeling badly, but everything I look at in the media is showing me 27-year-olds. Maybe if I followed blog posts about 40 or 50 plus women, I would see different information. And so sure enough, I started changing different blogs, different feeds. And I'm like, yeah, because you know what? There's nothing that's going to be relevant to me on the newsstand that's marketing to young women. I need to change my news stream. So I found that very helpful. I just kept what I was doing saying, I guess I'll adapt. I guess I'll sleep less. I'll wake up when I need to wake up. I guess I won't have as much energy and I'll have to say no to a few more commitments. And I've just tried not to be at war with myself.
That's great. Last week, I interviewed a person called Carolina Balmeres, and she uses the concept of notice and name, which I know is something, it's basically what you've just said. It's acknowledging the symptoms as they happen, the feelings, without judgment, and just saying, yep, this is where I am right now. And eventually you can reframe and, like you say, you could turn around and say things like, yep, right now I can't do anymore, so I'm just going to say no to this, it's fine. And then I'll move on. Is that correct?
Yes, I would say too that concept comes from mindfulness meditation. And I started my mindfulness practice maybe 2 years ago, but I would say in the last 3 months, I've really rounded a corner in terms of the application and the benefits. And whereas before I kind of thought, you know what, the research shit says you should do this. You, like me, we're not good at sitting still. How do you get a hyperactive person who wants to go, go, go and tell them to sit and be still? And I kept thinking, like, if I pay attention to my breath, I'm going to hyperventilate.
I get so bored. I start thinking about what I'm going to cook for dinner.
And I'll tell you something. For me, the game changer has been, I started following, there's a great book and now an app that's Dan Harris's. It's called 10% Happier. And he interviews journalistically all these meditation experts. And he calls it the Skeptic's Guide to Meditation. And really, what I've discovered is it really is a way of doing depth psychology on yourself outside of a therapist's office. And so if you haven't enjoyed meditation until now, don't give up on meditation. Try a different methodology because it can look and feel a million different ways. So find what's right for you. But that idea of distinguishing the voice in your head that we identify as being our personality is not our personality at all. It's just some voice in our head. And as he says, this is Dan Harris's quote, and I found out that that voice in my head is an asshole. and if you listen, it's very true. And what I've discovered, and probably truer to the other side of your profession, Amanda, is that in truth, so much more wisdom is actually held in the body. And the more I got out of my stinky thinking and this internal critic voice that was so judgmental and making miserable and moved into my body, where there's more information, believe it or not, only 10% of our consciousness happens. Everything else is pre-conscious or in the body. And once I shifted that modality, that was such a game changer for me. So yeah, noticing I'm judging, you know, being able to name and label feelings and to not have to react and respond to them. So it's really brought me a tremendous amount of peace, not just in menopause, but in so many other relationships with other people, not just with myself.
That combined with your mindfulness med practice, that fused the two together of being the changing factor.
You know, and I've long been a journaler, and I really advise anybody to take up journaling because it is one portal into knowing yourself better. And at this time in life where we're saying, what's my identity now? I've lived for so many other people. Like, how could I reinvent myself? Who could I be now? What's next for me? Those are hard questions to ask. And sometimes we don't know a mechanism to pull that out of us. And one of the mechanisms is to journal. Now, the kind of journaling I recommend is stream of consciousness, not like dear diary, it's sunny today, I'm going to go to the grocery store, like not that kind of reporting, but yeah, really stream of consciousness. Don't take your pen off the paper and go, go, go. It's, I mean, I think The Artist's Way is a book that describes it and calls it the morning pages. But the research shows, again, that this process, it moves us out of perseverating and going in circles, and it allows us to have some insights and move forward in things that have got us stuck. So it's research proven to be a really fantastic thing. And I've journaled, I've got, my bookshelf is full of as many books as it is journals. And you never have to go back and read them again, but you kind of get attached to your handwriting.
Although it might be fun to go back to your 20-year-old self and see what you were thinking at the time.
So, well, and because you can just burn them. Some people feel like if I write it, the whole world will know. But for years, when the difficult subject matter would come up for me, my handwriting would be like scribbles. If you were to look at the page, it literally is in code. You could never read what I wrote in my darkest time. And when life gets better, I'm more likely to go to like a script font that's actually handwriting that you could read.
So that's pretty interesting. I like that. Like you can just reflect, even just looking from a distance at how you were feeling at the time.
Yeah, right. Okay. If you can't make out my handwriting, you got to know it's a dark time.
Yeah. So that's two great ideas for people to try. I've got to be honest, I've tried meditation and I do struggle. I have got a lot of energy compared to some people and I can't be still. So I choose to go for quiet walks and I'll read my book because I have to be still when I read, but I'm still thinking of things then.
So I'll give you, this is again where we have to broaden the definition of meditation, which is in mindfulness meditation, going for a walk is absolutely perfect. A moving meditation is a beautiful thing. It's then about being open to the moment now, not spending your whole walk beating yourself up about whatever and not being in an anxious state, worrying about tomorrow, but being open and present to what's around you. If you ask yourself, like, wake up to this moment, are you suddenly smelling the flowers more? Do you notice now that there's actually two cardinals in that tree over there? And oh my gosh, I walk the same path every day and I've never noticed that this person has an awning in their backyard that went up. It's really just about being awake, because we spend so much of our life really walking around like robots. And it's healthy that we have these little programs because they free up our brain for some other processing. But we are such creatures of habits that sometimes we're actually dead. We're dead robots. So if I'm going to create a habit for myself, if I know that the brain wants habits, I'm going to bloody well say, this is my life. This is my time on planet Earth. I want those habits to be something I consciously chose, not some default setting that I didn't think about. And so that's really, the invitation to women. You biologically you have an imperative to go through this fertile valley to, like a lotus after 7 years, to spring up as a new second birth incarnation of yourself. And don't let it be the default settings. Let it be your newer, wiser, intentional self. It's really a creative exercise that's just a beautiful thing to think about.
And also this being present, we have to actually take the time to make sure it happens, because as women we tend to be like, I haven't got time for that, I'm busy, I've got to do breakfast, then the laundry, then I've got to go to work, and then I've got the kids. And everyone's got 5 minutes in their day, right? Everyone's got the time it takes to do this.
And I would even say, you don't need to, if you get good at it, once you spend a little time practicing, you don't have to add it to your day. It's how you go through your day. When you're making breakfast with your kids, are you thinking about them, or are you thinking about what's next or what just happened? Are you present? Are you there looking at them as if you're never going to see them again? I mean, I'll tell you how this really started for me, to tell you the truth, is my mother died of cancer at the age that I am right now. Can I tell you how horrifying that is to think about? And in fact, I became a mother just as I lost all my female role. Like, my mother died and three grandparents all died. And I listened to life as people would come visit my mother and spend the day with her as she was fighting cancer. And they would complain about the rain, or they'd complain about they couldn't get a parking spot at the grocery store or something. And I thought, how dare you? You get to live. Like, I was so angry at hearing people complain about the most stupid things when, I only had days left with my mother. Yeah. And so after that, it changed me forever. I just thought, I am given this one precious day. I don't know if I'm going to get other ones. I'm going to live every day with this idea that I've got to make the most of it. Other people didn't get this day. My mother didn't get this day. And it really did shake me to waking up in that way. And I've never really, sometimes I get busy and whatever, but it did change me forever in the way. Now my retirement savings plan is, Freedom 99 is my financial plan, but I really do start every day by saying, what's important? How do I make the best of this day? And
I love that.
Yes, we all have to do the laundry, but you know what? I can do the laundry and say, thank God I have clothes on my back. Some people have none. You know, what's the fragrance are you using in the pod? I'm just much more awake.
Yeah, that's great. That's super great advice to have that attitude in life, or even just to take pause when you feel like you're going to react in a negative way and just see if you can just change the way you're going to approach a situation and reframe it. I think that's great advice.
But again, that's, it's exercising the muscle that says there is something between our feelings and our reaction. There is a gap. I don't need to blurt out, you jerk. I can pause. I can wait. There's other choices I can make. And learning to make that pause helps us not be reactive.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's hard for me because I'm a reactive person. My husband is a jerk sometimes. Sometimes, occasionally. We need to think about finishing up, but I have one question that I'd like to run by you from one of your super fans, I might add. It's along the lines that we've been speaking about. She has followed you and your advice about parenting and communicating with children, and she has asked if you have any tips on how to communicate your needs and how to stay connected to your partner through all of these different symptoms of low libido, mood swings, etc. during menopause.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that people have the assumption that if you're in a long-term relationship, that it doesn't still require energy input and that there isn't still things to learn about the nature of love and mature relationships. And there is. And so if you're finding that this is really a struggle, I think that going for marriage counseling is a little bit like, it's like people always wait till everything is broken down before they go to counseling. But I prefer the metaphor of a car. If you have a car, you take it in for regular oil changes, you get the cabin filters fixed, you look after your car, and you have to look after your marriage through the different phases. So here you are going into midlife and menopause and low libidos and mood switch. And so it's like changing the oil for the season. I would go in for counseling and say, hey, you know what? We're not firing on all four gaskets in our relationship anymore. Can you help us out? To be willing to understand that love is something that we often think is alive or it's dead, and we forget that when we pay attention to it, we can throw oil or gas on the fire and we can re-stimulate love. And in fact, it wasn't dead, it went dormant. And many people get divorced thinking that the love is gone. And it's not that it's gone, it just needed to get rekindled. It was still there. We have some real misconceptions about how love and intimacy and closeness works. And certainly, there are quadriplegics that still know how to make love. It is so much more a mind game than a body game. And there are ways to be loving that don't involve sex at all. So a lot of those things come down to philosophy, education, opening our minds, rather than just saying like, oh yeah, everyone's marriages dry up and throwing our hands in the air. I think we can say, I hold the bar higher for myself. I'm not going to let it go that route and put the energy into either your own self-education or finding a professional.
Having open dialogue and conversation with your partner as well. I found that that's been very helpful. Just reiterating, if the connection's not there, that you still can have a loving relationship. It just try and find different ways to do that. Go for walks together, go for meals, talk, be kind. And, it's not forever this, right? It's just another phase that we're going through. And I think people think that marriage, like you said, is maybe you build up this relationship and then you're on it. It's fine for the rest of the journey, but it's not that way at all.
No, in fact, it's amazing how poor we are at communicating generally. We're not trained. Some people seem to have the skill, but we don't get a lot of lessons in it. I would recommend, just because we want to give some real takeaways for listeners, there's something that we advise as homework to our couples in marriage counseling. And it's a different way of communicating. You know how in parenting I talk about having family meetings or family council meetings? So in the marriage, we talk about having a couples meeting, couple council. And the couple council is a very unique way of talking to your partner. And what you do is you put aside an hour, and in that hour, one person talks or has the floor.
Do they have the stick? Do they have the talking stick
for the first half hour.
Okay.
And the other partner does not talk at all. They just listen. And in fact, it's often helpful because people can react and respond and communicate with their face. Sometimes the best way to do it is putting your backs to each other or lying in bed in the dark and both looking up at the ceiling so that you don't pick up on body language and eyeball rolling or whatever might happen. And you really want to have a free space to talk. And you may say nothing for 20 minutes and then talk the last 10 minutes. Or you might say something for 10 minutes and then can't think of anything else. And then you talk for the last 3 minutes. Doesn't matter. You own that half hour. And then you switch. And your partner then has half an hour to either say, well, you know, here's what I want you to know about what you said. Or they may not respond. They may come up with completely new information they want you to hear. And then the next week when you do it, you switch who goes first. And let me tell you why this is an important change. Because usually when we're listening to our partner, we're busy coming up with our rebuttal. Or we get so distracted by talking about the superficial material that we never go deep. And so if you just give someone the floor and they aren't interrupted, suddenly what seems like they're complaining about why didn't you switch the laundry over and you let it sit in the dryer and get moldy will suddenly become, I feel like you never consider, you know, how much I have to do around the house. And I feel like my work is unappreciated. Like that's the conversation, but yeah. Sometimes it takes 30 minutes to get that piece out. So it's a way of going deep instead of staying with where we normally stay, which is incredibly superficial and not really the point.
We adopt the family meeting. We do this. We're not as strict as we used to, but we sit at the table after dinner one night a week and we have a conversation, and it's been a game changer because especially for the children who feel like they never have a voice, and they don't really have a voice in my family, but I let them talk.
We've got more work to do.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to win any parent in the world yet. But listen, Alison, we have to wrap it up. But this was such a great conversation. There's so many takeaways here. One of the main things I'd love women to take from this chat that we've had is that it's pretty normal that they're going through all of this, and there are ways to help yourself. There's a lot of talk you have to do with your own self and give yourself a bit of self-care and self-love and know that this is okay. You know, you're going to get through this, but do some proactive things to help this an easier process.
Yeah, I think if we see it as part of it is the grieving for what we've already had and loved and the gap in between before this next new growth, that it's a time we would never ask someone to rush grief. We would never ask somebody to rush new development. So just be as kind to yourself as you would invite another friend who is going through that process, and to know that it is developed biologically, developmentally, the job that we're to be doing right now.
That's perfect. So thank you so much, Alison. I love this conversation. It's going to be so helpful for people. Thank you for coming along.
Oh, thank you for inviting me and for taking on this really important initiative for women. It's awesome.
So if you'd like to find out more about Alison, you can head over to her website at alisonschafer.com. I'll make sure all the information is embedded within this post. You can follow her. Is that the best way to contact you, Alison?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and also her Facebook page, Alison Schafer, where she does live videos, which I find great. They're really helpful. Short and straight to the point, I believe, right?
Yeah. All my media handles, whether it's the YouTube, the Fit, whatever, it's all through my website. You can just click and it'll take you to all my social feeds. And it is true that Facebook Live, I take questions from parents live, so that we do that on the last Thursday of every month. So if you have a question, come join me.
Join them. Okay, thank you, Alison. And see you all next week, everyone. Thanks for joining in the show.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com. Or her Fit and Chips Facebook page. Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.